Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammā sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammā sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammā sambuddhassa. Bhutan dhammang sanghang namassami. If you cannot hear at the back, please come closer. My voice isn't very strong this evening. For this evening's Dhamma discourse, I was going to base the talk this evening on the quite well-known simile of the raft in the Alagata Upama Sutta. The reason I wish to talk about this because it does give a very good indication of what the path of practice is for the person aiming at enlightenment, and also because a simile is not very well explained usually, and some of the meanings of the terms used by the Buddha are misinterpreted, and when they're understood fully it gives a beautiful description of the path towards enlightenment. And the Buddha was always talking, when he was talking with his monks, about the path towards enlightenment and nothing less. And I've noticed through my own practice and through the readings of the suttas in Pali that the similes which the Buddha used are not just taken just superficially, that they have very deep and meaningful similes embedded in them, and one can contemplate these things again and again and get deeper meanings. The simile of the raft, as many of you will know, is a simile of a person going on a journey and realizing that this shore is dangerous and is fraught with trouble. And so this shore, the only way to escape that danger is to go across this large body of water. There's no bridge, there's no causeway. The only way you can get across is by making a raft, collecting twigs and branches, putting the raft together, and then making effort with his hands and feet. He struggles and gets across this vast mass of water. And so he goes from one shore, the shore which is dangerous and fraught with difficulty and problems, and goes across to the other shore which is without dangers. And then the simile of the raft, the Buddha asks, if that person kept the raft on his head, would he be doing the right thing? The monk said no. And the Buddha continued that what he should do is to sink that raft or leave it by the shore and go on, having abandoned that raft. And the Buddha finishes off with this very enigmatic and misunderstood phrase that you should know the simile of the raft, and that even dhammas are to be abandoned, let alone those things which are not dhamma. Dhammapi pahetabha pagewa adhamma. And the first thing to notice here, that just a very small point, but something which is well worth noticing, that it means that you cannot ever say that it's all Dhamma. Because sometimes this little phrase which has crept into the Buddhism in the West, it's all Dhamma, it's all Dhamma. And there's a phrase here where the Buddha said, no, there's such a thing called Adhamma. And there's two things, Dhamma and Adhamma, and one should know the difference between the two of them. There's two things, Kusala and Akusala, and there's a vast difference between them. And as you should all know, if you listen to me long enough, that the Akusala is to be abandoned through effort, and it's to be avoided arising in the future through effort. And the Kusala, the Dhamma, is to be aroused through effort, and to be maintained and developed further through effort. And this path, as taught by the Buddha, is not simply knowing things, it's doing something about it. It's not simply watching with mindfulness. Mindfulness is only one of the factors of the Eightfold Path. If you know something is akusala, is harmful, is adhamma, you should abandon it, get rid of it, abolish it. And this is very clearly stated in the suttas, and anyone who has seen the Dhamma would also concur that this is what one has to do. This is the path. This is how one achieves nirvana, by noticing the kusala and the akusala. But let's go back to the simile of the raft. The simile of the raft begins with a person realizing that this shore is dangerous. Many people don't even get that far on the journey. In fact, the majority don't even get that far on the journey. If you are to go to the other shore, one has to realize, first of all, that this shore is dangerous. This shore is fraught with dukkha and problems. One has to realize the dukkha of sensory experience. Remember also that the Kulupama, the simile of the raft, was taught by the Buddha as a result of a monk called Arita, who was saying that sensory pleasures are not a danger. And he didn't realize, Arita was someone who didn't realize that this shore is dangerous. He thought that this shore was, one could find a place of safety on this shore. That one could find a nook or a cranny, a cave, or build a house or a fortress or whatever on this shore where dukkha would not come. The first thing one should realize is the, as I keep saying, the depth and breadth of dukkha concerning the sensory experiences, the world of the five external senses. To see that sensory pleasure, as the Buddha said, is of little happiness and much suffering, of little satisfaction and much danger. It's not to say that the world of sensory pleasures is without happiness. If it was without happiness, no one would get caught and attached therein. There is happiness, there is pleasure, there is satisfaction in the world of the five senses, but it is small compared to the danger and dissatisfaction and suffering and frustration and grief and confusion which they engender. One should know this shore to be dangerous. Again, if one doesn't know this shore to be fully dangerous, one will wander up and down this shore trying to find places of refuge. It's only when one knows fully, completely, that this shore is dangerous, that one will have the ability or the incentive to go across. In fact, the realization that this shore is dangerous is nothing less than stream entry, sotapanna, to notice the extent of dukkha. So the first task of all practitioners who wish to cross to the other shore is to realize the danger and difficulty of this shore. And again, not many people, even monks, realize the danger of this shore, and we play around too long and we get caught by the robbers and the thieves, and we get entangled in the difficulties, in the intimacy and the delights of the shore, and we get into great problems as a result. Why do people let these things happen to them? Because the ignorance delusion is just so strong, one just does not realize the danger of this shore. Delusion is that which masks the truth. We don't see that this shore is dangerous. We don't see it because we don't want to see it. As I've said many times here before, you cannot trust your perceptions, your thoughts and your views. Just seeing things as they are is very dangerous. many times that people do not see things as they are. They only see things as they want them to be. They see things through the distortion of the defilements. One sees things as beautiful, one sees things as attractive, one sees things as not being a problem. One sees things as not being a problem, one thinks one is in control. Day after day, year after year. If one plays with a snake, so I was told, or if one keeps snakes as pets or whatever, one day, eventually, the snake will turn around and bite you. If you play with the sensory world, the world of the five senses, or the desires and delights therein, you may think you're in control. You may think that you can take these things or leave these things and just get that amount of happiness and avoid the pain. Do not be so stupid. One day the snakes will turn around and bite your hand. Inevitable. If one could only realize the danger of these things and the problem of these things. Many times we just rely on experience. Experience is not deep enough to understand the danger of this shore. We get bitten by a snake once and we think, oh, that's because I made a mistake, grabbed it in the wrong spot. We don't realize that no matter how you grab that snake, it will eventually turn around and bite. This shore is full of snakes. But the idea is to get away from this shore, away from the snakes, away from the sensory desire, the world of sensory desire. Experience is not enough. One has to have insight. Insight into the depth and breadth of dukkha. That deep insight which shows you at the fundamental level that there cannot be any satisfaction and happiness in the world of the five senses. In fact, that this is a dangerous and sticky world. Once one truly realizes the danger and the stickiness, the opportunity for deep existential pain and deep physical pain and mental pain in the world of the five senses, only then will one get the disgust for this shore. Only then will one develop the aversion for this shore of the world of the five senses. Without aversion to the dangers of this shore, one would never bother to put forth the effort to collect the grass and sticks and paddle oneself across. The aversion for the dangers of the five senses is no more or no less than the aversion to touching fire, no more or no less than the aversion of playing around with snakes, no more no less the aversion of crossing a street which is busy with traffic. It is the aversion of that which is truly painful and which is going to cause suffering to oneself. That which is going to cause suffering should not be looked upon with equanimity. That which is the cause of suffering should be abandoned, said the Buddha. We should be given up, said the Buddha, and should be done so with effort, not just sitting there watching. You can be as mindful as you wish on this part of the shore, but it will not protect you from the snakes, from the thieves, from the danger of this shore. Unless you realize this, you will never get the effort, you will never collect the wood and the sticks to build your raft. You'll be stuck on this shore, thinking you're safe, and then one day someone will come along and you'll get entangled in relationships, entangled in old age and death, entangled in new birth. You'll be entangled. So please realize the danger of the world of the five senses. And if you realize the danger of the world of the five senses, build your raft to get across the flood, or this great body of water, as I understand, the simile of the raft is just this world of the five senses, to get across that, beyond that. It's wide and it's deep, it's not easy to get across. First one needs to realize the danger. And then one collects the grass and sticks. The raft is no more, no less than the Eightfold Path of the Aryan. I mentioned this a year or two ago, it needs to be mentioned again. The way leading to Nibbana is called the Aryan Eightfold Path. The Eightfold Path of the Aryan. The Eightfold Path of the Sotapanna, Sakadagami and Anagami. The Eightfold Path of the Putuchana would not be called the Aryan Eightfold Path. Be called the ordinary Eightfold Path, a bit of this, a bit of that, but none of the factors informed by right view. And the ordinary Eightfold Path will not lead across the stream. The ordinary Eightfold Path will, however, lead to the realization that this shore is dangerous. And you better get out quick if you wish to overcome suffering. The ordinary Eightfold Path, as we've mentioned, a very beautiful passage in the, I think it's the Mahavedala Sutta, where to realize this first path and fruit, to realize that this shore is dangerous, one needs five things. And that is sila, the virtuous conduct, sutta, the knowledge of the Buddha's teachings, sakaccha, the discussion of those teachings, which make sure that one has not comprehended these teachings in a wrong way, and samatha, the quelling of the mind, or rather the quelling of the five hindrances which obstruct insight, and lastly vipassana, the investigation of phenomena in terms of anicca, dukkha or anatta once the five hindrances have been fully abandoned. One needs all those five to realize that this shore is dangerous, to realize the extent of dukkha in this sensory realm. And having realized those things, then one will collect up the leaves and the twigs of the Aryan Eightfold Path. The leaves and the twigs of the Aryan Eightfold Path have Sama Samadhi as their leader. It's the eighth and last factor of the Eightfold Path. I say this because the overcoming of the attachment to this shore, the overcoming of the attachment to the world of the five senses, is overcome through the development of the four jhanas. You may notice, and this needs to be reflected on again and again, that the very first of the jhanas is noted as the pleasure and happiness born of viveka. Viveka is this aloofness and separation. But aloofness and separation from what? The Buddha described this, and this bears up in experience. This is the aloofness and separation from karma sanya, from the perception of the five physical senses. These are the coarse five physical senses, all that except from the mind. And this happiness and bliss is born of the viveka. Born of aloofness, born of having set off from this shore. You have left it. if you cannot achieve that jhana, even first jhana, it shows that you are still attached to this shore. It shows one still hasn't seen the danger on this shore, that one's mind still plays around on this shore. It hasn't got the fear of this shore. It hasn't got the aversion to this shore, the nibbida to this shore, and it'll still play around therein. The jhanas are the way of overcoming the attachment to the world of the five senses. Why is one attached to the world of the five senses, to this shore? It is because one still sees happiness, beauty, permanence, a sense of control herein. One still views that which is impermanent as being permanent, that which is beautiful, that which is ugly, sorry, one still views that which is ugly, asupa, as being beautiful. One still views that which is not yours as being mine. One still views that which is dukkha as being sukha. One still views somewhere in this shore some place which is sukha, which is happiness, which is permanent, which is in your control. That is why one is attached and never sets off for the other shore. These jhanas are born of light view, and they are accompanied with effort. They are born of effort. They are grounded on virtue. Without virtue, there's no hope for gaining these states. And as one develops the jhanas here, one goes across to the other shore. Instead of the mind finding delight in the world of the five senses, it finds its happiness, its delight, its refuge in the joys of the mind. It does seem that the holy life, the monastic life, the life which is designed to be apart from sensory pleasures, where the monastic life which has the rules of vinaya, which keep the monks or the nuns secluded from TVs, from entertainments, keeps them secluded from sex and intimacy with the other sex. The reason it does this is because it expects the monks to find their happiness elsewhere. You cannot live in any life, in any situation, in any community where you don't feel happy, where you don't find happiness and some form of satisfaction. The monastic life is designed to have its happiness and satisfaction through letting go of the world of the five senses and dwelling in the world of the mind. That satisfaction does need seclusion. It does need, this is called physical seclusion, it does need the separation from burdens. It does need the time and the place and the quietness and the support where one can develop that happiness born of seclusion. The happiness of a monk, nekama sukha, the happiness of renunciation. This monastic life is designed for the happiness of renunciation. And it's hard to develop that happiness of renunciation when you haven't even renounced your wife, your husband, your children, your home. It's why we have monasteries. It's why the Buddha established the vinaya. It's why the Buddha encouraged monks not to associate overmuch with lay people, to give the freedom, the opportunity, the space to develop the happiness of a monk, the happiness of aloofness from the world of the five senses. And if one can overcome the world of the five senses, having realized right view, one has actually crossed that river, crossed that great expanse of water. One has gone to the other side, which is where the dangers from the five senses cannot reach you. This is the other shore. Notice that having overcome the world of the five senses fully through having developed one's joy and happiness through the jhanas, through renunciation, through aloofness, one still finds the pleasure in the world of the mind. What one has overcome are what they call the five lower fetters, the five fetters which are connected with this shore, the five fetters concerned with the other shore are yet to be abandoned. The five lower fetters you should know are as follows, and one should learn these 10 fetters off by heart because they are important pointers of this Buddhist path to enlightenment. The five lower fetters, the five fetters which are connected with this shore, with this side of this great expanse of water, are the fetters of Sakkaya Ditti. The view that there is a self in any of the five khandhas as individual units or as a conglomerate of different khandhas. The view that there is a self in rupa, in form or body, there is a self in feeling, perception, somewhere in the mental formations or consciousness itself, either in or of, containing, inside or whatever, these five khandhas. That Sakkaya Ditti needs to be overcome. Sakkaya Ditti is something which has been conditioned inside of you for so long, it's very, very difficult to unearth and overcome. There's always some part which you take to be self, I, me. So much so that I was reading a little pamphlet someone gave me in Melbourne where someone was trying to argue that the Buddha's teachings as found in Theravada were slanted and were not true, thinking there is ambiguities and inconsistencies in the Theravada teachings. All it was the person still hadn't seen what the Buddha meant by non-self, was still clinging somewhere to an idea of a self, not seeing, not understanding, and still caught with Sakkaya Ditti, but still thinking they'd understood, still thinking they'd seen. Sakkaya Ditti means any view of self in any place whatsoever. It's a hard one to see. The only way you see it is through insight when the five hindrances are overcome. You see it as a shock. The first, most important hindrance is Sakkaya Ditti. There's also the Sila Bhatta Paramasa, the idea that you can get release through rites and rituals, and Wichikichara, the doubt, uncertainty about the Buddha's teachings. The doubt and uncertainty about the Buddha's teachings, Wichikichara. It was there amongst the Puttichanas of the time, so much so that they concocted Mahayana, born of Wichikichara, not understanding, doubting the Buddha's teachings. If one overcomes Wichikichara, one will take the Buddha's teachings on face value. One will have no doubt that the Buddha was the unsurpassed teacher of men, women, devas, who were willing to be trained, and that his teachings were suakkato, were well pronounced, and the Sangha at the time of the Buddha, were supreme. They weren't, as sometimes you hear in some Mahayana teachings, that the Sangha at the time of the Buddha were of low intelligence and impaired faculties, and the true supreme teachings had to be kept in the Naga world until people arose who were intellectually able to understand the deeper teachings. You would have faith, confidence, that the Sangha of Sotapanna, Zagatagamis, Anagamis, and Arahats were the supreme field of merit. And the Arahat was the highest, the supreme, the one who had overcome suffering. Those three fetters are what stopped one becoming Sotapanna, the stream enterer. If one doubts this, then one is still Putuchana. Having overcome these three fetters through the seeing insight, one has seen the danger in this shore. One has seen dukkha, the sabbe sankhara dukkha, the all conditioned things being dukkha. Conditioned things means everything you experience in your mind. Consciousness itself, choice, experience, all this is dukkha. Why is it dukkha? Because it arises and passes away. That which arises and passes away, said the Buddha, is dukkha. Consciousness arises and passes away, it's dukkha. Perception arises and passes away, it's dukkha. Thought arises and passes away, it's dukkha. Feeling, even happy feeling, arises and passes away, it's dukkha. All that arises and passes away, said the dukkha, unequivocally is dukkha. Therefore it should be abandoned. Having seen this, one has seen the danger of this shore. One has to cross to the other shore to overcome the fourth and fifth fetters, the Sanyojana. I think it's called Karma, Chanda and Vyapada, if I'm not mistaken. But it is the delight, the happiness of the sensory realm, and the Vyapada, the ill will, which always goes along with Karma, Chanda or Karma Raga. This is the ill will which is born of frustration, born of disappointment, born of grief, when one's desire and delight in the world of these five senses is frustrated and obstructed. If one didn't desire anything in this world of the five senses, one wouldn't have ill will. One wouldn't be upset and angry where one didn't get what one wanted. One would not feel that it was someone else's fault that this dukkha happened to one. One wouldn't lay blame with somebody else. One would see its defilements inside oneself, which is the cause of the problem. If one could only see this much, ill will would be overcome. See, the problem is not with him, with her, it's with me. Anyone who blames someone else is not seeing the full problem. If it's wrong and it's unwise to tell someone else what your mind or you should reflect, each individual, it's your job to reflect. So one overcomes these five lower fetters. The five fetters pertain to this shore. When one has reached the far shore through the raft, one has got across, one has cultivated the jhanas and sees one's happiness just in the bliss of the mind. They say that a person who has reached anagami, the non-return, who's crossed to the other shore, is a person who has fulfilled not only sila, morality, virtue, but has also fulfilled samadhi, fulfilled this ability to reach jhanas, to develop concentration. Because they have left behind the world of the five senses, the major obstacle barring them to jhanas is fully overcome. I was reading in a sutta just before I went to Melbourne, I forget the name of the sutta now, a very fascinating sutta, because it was saying that the four jhanas are higher and supreme than jnana dasana. That these are higher things than knowledge and vision. What it means is that this knowledge and vision in this sutta is the knowledge and vision of the first path and fruit, Sotapanna. And the jhanas especially are developed fully at this time in the gradual path. It's leading to the non-returner, to the anagami. Once one has full power over the jhanas, it's a sign that one has fully left the hither shore. One has fully left the world of the five senses. And one has no obstruction, no obstacle to the happiness born of just mind. At this point, the Buddha said that the unwise disciple carries that raft on top of their heads. Even the commentary points that this is carrying the samatha on top of their heads, carrying the jhana practice on top of their heads, still being attached to the happiness born of the aloofness from the world of the five senses. And if you look at the five higher fetters, the fetters which belong to the other shore, the far shore, those five further or other shore fetters are rupa raga, the delights in the rupa jhanas, arupa raga, the delight in the arupa jhanas. These are the delight in the form jhanas and the formless jhanas. Mana, the sense of I am, superior, inferior, the same. Udacha, which is agitation. And avijja, the delusion which still arises in the realm of perception and thought, which still takes these states to be the highest happiness, who still thinks that the happiness born of just mind is permanent, true happiness, mine, beautiful. Remember these four aspects of the vipalasas, taking that which is asupa, which is ugly, to be supa, beautiful, taking that which is impermanent, anicca, to be permanent, taking that which is not yours, non-self, anatta, to be self, and taking that which is dukkha, to be sukha, happiness. Once one overcomes the five fetters of the further shore, it's as if one puts down the raft which has carried one across. One has let go of the last fetters, the fetters of the other shore. One changes from anagami to arahat, the fully enlightened, which is why the Buddha was saying that if you understand the simile of the raft, you will abandon the good dhammas, even the jhana states, let alone the adhammas, the defilements which are born of the sensory realm. You'll abandon even the non-sensual happinesses, let alone the sensual ones. And when you consider that this discourse was spoken to Arita, who hadn't even abandoned the sensual happinesses, you'll understand the pertinence of the simile of the Ra. What the Buddha certainly did not say was that one abandons sila or samadhi or panya having crossed from the other shore. What one is abandoning is the fetters, the lower fetters and the higher fetters. The fetters of this shore and the fetters of the other shore. And those fetters are not, say, abandoning jhana, but abandoning the attachment to those states. The idea, the view, the perception, the thought that these things are in themselves true happiness, are permanent, mine, beautiful. This is what one is supposed to abandon. Very often one comes across teachings which says that having crossed the shore you abandon even the virtue and one can do whatever one wishes. That is not the Buddha's teaching. But anyone who says that accumulates enormous bad karma for misrepresenting the Buddha's teaching and leading others astray. As I mentioned a week or two ago when I read out the Pasadika Sutta, there are certain things which an arahat just cannot do by its nature, spontaneously if you like. The arahat cannot commit sexual intercourse, kill a living being, steal, lie, store up goods, or act out of greed, hatred, delusion or fear. These things are impossible for the arahat. So this cannot be the raft which the arahat, one who has crossed, throws down. The arahat still keeps sila, still keeps samadhi, still keeps panya. What he's let down are sanyojanas or fetters. So this is the simile of the raft as I understand it, noticing the importance of jhanas as the way to get across this vast flood which one can call the world of the five senses, the attachment to this world of the five senses, the delight in the realm of the five senses. And even at this stage, practicing jhana meditation is a test for you of how attached you are to the realm of five senses. A test. Sometimes we can think we're not attached. Sometimes we think that we are equanimous to the delightful and unpleasant things which come before our five senses. The test is whether you can let these things go. Letting go is seen if one can attain to a jhana. It shows that you can let go, that you can be aloof, that you can vivicha kamehi, vivicha akusala dhammehi, be aloof from unwholesome states and aloof from the world of the five senses. So this is my understanding and explanation of the simile of the raft. First of all, at least realize this shore is dangerous. Thank you very much. Are there any questions or comments on this evening's talk? there's no questions or comments, we'll finish the talk this evening.